Hi, today is July 9th, 2016, and this is Tadagasawara at Mobius 165. My good friend John Westfall is there, and I messed up the introduction because we haven't done this in 2 weeks.
But, you know, you got all the pertinent information.
Yeah, just not in the right order.
Order is so overrated. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you make a sandwich, is the order really all that important? I mean,
to some people it is.
As long as the bread's not in the middle, you're doing it okay.
Okay, so to get started, we're going to get started with something that was really popular. So popular that at least a Google subsidiary couldn't keep up with its demand, which I found kind of ironic. So
I think of this in terms of when a group of Microsoft MVPs may have crashed Foursquare servers when it first came out. But this is much bigger and much more of a hassle.
Yeah, so the name of the game for the iPhone, I guess for Android, I don't know. Is it on Android? I'm not sure. But definitely on iPhone is Pokemon Go. And it was developed by Niantic, which is a sub of Google. You might remember Niantic because they built Ingress. And I haven't played the game. But my understanding is Pokemon Go is essentially a skinned, branded skin on top of Niantic's Ingress kind of augmented reality game where, you know, you go out into the real world and go find things. I think it doesn't have teams. I'm not exactly sure. It looks like a simple version.
I think it does have teams.
It does have teams?
I've had some people in my social media feeds saying I'm on Team Blue.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think
it does. Which makes sense because that's how Pokemon works, right? They have, like, colored teams and things like that. But at any rate, the game has apparently taken the world by storm, which it can't be said of its predecessor, Ingress, which was popular in a niche kind of, you know, geeky, nerdy market. Of which, you know, our friends probably belong.
let's make this clear. Both Ingress and Pokemon Go are popular in a niche nerdy market. It's just their niche nerdy market is way bigger than our niche nerdy market.
So it rolled out, and there's an article and I'll link to in the show notes for this podcast that basically it's so popular it crashed Niantic servers. Now, again, it's not really Google servers, but let's face it, they've got some good money in them.
I'm assuming that they're on the Google Cloud platform.
Yeah. I understand that the folks that run Amazon's cloud offer to give them some capacity if they couldn't keep up. here it is. Amazon CTO Werner Vogels couldn't resist the joke at Niantic's expense, offering to help Amazon Web Services cloud hosting service to keep the game available. So it's good humor rivalry there. Hey, so have you tried the game? I have not. I've installed it, but I've not tried it.
I haven't tried it. I haven't even installed it yet. I've thought about it. I've heard some interesting things. I was just talking about before we started podcasting, I was at coffee with a couple of friends and my wife, and we were talking about it. And one of the things that came up was their conversations that they have friends who are parents who are using it with their kids for things like basically physical activity. Hey, let's go out. Let's try to catch Pokemon and stuff like that. So that I thought that was a really cool sort of way to get your kids active. Then I've heard that there are some times when you're told to go search for a Pokemon and you go to the place and it's a boarded up building and, you know, the best quote was, is it really worth breaking in to get a Charizard and stuff like that. Yeah. So that it seems like there's some bugs more than just capacity bugs, but overall I like the idea of the game. I really like that people are getting into it.
Yeah, as far as anecdotal stories, again, I haven't played it, but I've been reading about it. In one case, the goal, and I don't really know how this actually works, but I assume you got to go find stuff like Pokemon. The thing that they're searching for is in a police station. The police had to chase out all the people going in there to go find their Pokemon thing. and on a more serious note, a number of people have become injured by this. I think I read one quote in a news article that said this young lady was playing the game. And she, you know, you're kind of it's augmented reality, but you don't really see enough of reality in your tiny screen. And she was walking along, and she thought she's looking at her screen, and she fell in a hole.
Yeah, well, that seems like it's a bad thing, and it seems like you'd not want that. It's interesting, also. Have you seen, and I'm trying to figure out what it is, the button or Pokemon ball thing that you can get that goes with the game? Because I've seen this, and I'm trying to pull up an Engadget post on it right now. Okay. That apparently there is a Pokemon Go Plus that makes use of this wearable, And it's basically an optional add-on for Pokemon Go that reduces the action of capturing a Pokemon to a series of blinking lights. You push the button and attempt to capture, and the device responds with a blue light to indicate success or failure. And the idea is making it possible for Pokemon trainers to participate in the game without having to pull out their phones. They'll stay focused on the real world. If they're on their way somewhere, they can keep walking, and if they're in the middle of a conversation, they can keep talking. However, Pokemon can be a bit of an obsession, and it's unlikely that someone's going to push the button and without wanting to pull out her phone. So that's their Engadget's that's Chris Natas at Engadget's thoughts on the $35 Pokemon Go wearable. Pokemon Go Plus. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting interesting phenomenon. I'll be curious to see how long it lasts, and you know, you never know, Todd. Maybe you and I will get into this at some point.
And I have to say, I did install Ingress when it came out. Honestly, I was not interested enough to really configure it, but a friend of mine configured it for me, and I still didn't use it. So... we'll see. We'll see. And I was never, you know, I'm kind of too old for the Pokemon crowd. In fact, I'm not even sure my daughter played Pokemon. I can't remember now.
Your daughter might have been too old. At the lower end of the craze, and I think I was at the higher end. Because I know my brother-in-laws, who are about 5 years younger than me, they really were into Pokemon when it was out, and they were collecting cards and all that other stuff.
Oh, okay,
stuff,
so my daughter may have been too young. Got it.
Yeah, I think she was on the low end. I was on the high end.
Yeah. So in any case, so Pokemon Go, we'll follow this. I'm always interested in these, not virtual reality, but augmented reality kind of things. So we'll see how it goes. I know a couple of people at work who do it. A number of my Facebook friends are playing it, so it's kind of.
Well, that was the other joking thing that I talked about with my friends was the idea that there are actually some workplaces now that are putting up signs that are basically bosses telling their employees, don't try to catch Pokemon while you're working, because you know it might result in you getting fired. You might catch that Pokemon, but you might lose your job at the same time. So,
well, we'll see how obsessed these Pokemon Go players are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up is actually, you know, John and I didn't have a podcast the previous week, the weekend, 4th of July weekend. So some is a little bit old, but worth mentioning. One is, of course, that Android N now is no longer just N. I was, of course, hoping for a Nutty McNutface, but Android N is Nougat, N-O-U-G-A-T. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to it. My Nexus 6 is going to get Nougat and then nothing else after that, which is kind of sad. So I'll probably have to spring for a new phone in 2017 just to get the latest Android.
Nougat and nothing.
Yeah. You know, but that's the problem with Android, right? You really, your upgrade cycle is very short.
Yeah.
So the Nexus 6 came out 2 years ago? I think 2 years ago. Because 6P came out late last year, right? 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So really it'll be, you know, less than 3 years and no upgrades.
Well, you know, Todd, it's made up for the fact that your upgrade might be released 1 year and then you actually get it the next. So you might not actually get to a lot of upgrades, but the upgrades might take 4 or 5 years for you to actually get them. So,
well, the nice thing about having a Nexus device is that when the upgrades come out, they're usually available within a month or two.
Very true. That is the best thing about the Nexus one.
Yeah, which is why I've bought a Nexus since the Nexus 1. I haven't bought all of them, but I do have the Nexus 1, Nexus 4, and Nexus 6.
I had the Nexus 1. I had the Nexus S that came out or whatever it was right after it, and then I had the Galaxy Nexus, but I haven't had any Nexuses. Yeah. I haven't had any Nexi after that.
Yeah. So, and I have to say, I've really enjoyed using my Nexus 6. Made especially good use of it because it's on Google Fi plan, which is why I bought it. In fact, I bought it as part of Google Fi switch over from T-Mobile. And I won't badmouth T-Mobile, but I did have some bad experiences with them. Ironically, of course, Google Fi partly uses T-Mobile. It uses T-Mobile and Sprint in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it uses T-Mobile International when you're roaming. So when I was in the U.K. last month and in April, I was able to get signal sometimes. You know, there are certain rural areas you can't get it. And, of course, it crashed completely one day in June in London. So I had no voice, anything, data that day, which was lots of fun because I was going to meet my daughter at the station and spend a week with her there before we came home. And so it was like, I've got no GPS. Well, I have GPS, but I've got no working maps, you know. But at any rate, that was fun. Okay, so, Nutty McNuckface, which I think is a shame. A great name. Next one I know is something near and dear to your heart, and that's Evernote's pricing change. So, the big deal for most people is that they increased the price slightly. I think it's about $70 a year now for the top-level premium.
Yep.
And the free service now limits you to syncing two devices. And since then, I was really surprised at the backlash of this. I mean, I knew there'd be some, but at least in the tech press, there are a lot of upset people. There are a lot of articles on how to switch to OneNote, which basically is a bad idea, in my opinion. But
yeah, I actually, my thoughts on this. First of all, I realized that I renewed right before the price increase,
okay.
So I felt really good about that.
Yeah.
I saw that automatic renewal go through, and then a few days later, they announced the upgrade. And I thought, what did I renew at? And I looked back, and I renewed at the lower level.
Yeah, $50.
So that was cool, but yeah. Yep. And then I thought about this, and I found an article that actually talked about migrating Evernote over to Google Drive and Google Keep and basically using that. And I started playing around with that. I actually thought about it. The migration didn't go so great, and I thought, you know what? I already paid for another year Evernote. I'm going to stick with Evernote for at least another year. But I really have started looking at other options, and I can't find anything that replicates what I do with Evernote.
I agree.
Which makes me simultaneously happy that I'm on Evernote, because it seems to fit my workflow really well, and a little bit scared, because Evernote, as we've all known in the last year or two, has had some rather strange issues going on. We worry about Evernote. They're not on the death watch list by any means, but they're on the what's going to happen with Evernote list,
right?
Which is a short list, but you know. So I wonder, and I think I'm just going to over the next year start looking at other options a little bit more. Start thinking about maybe more traditional options, like actual file structure based options instead of note with attachment, which is basically what I do the majority of the time now. And also looking at options for exporting my Evernote out, because you can export Evernote to HTML with attachments. That's not a very elegant solution by any means. You can also export to the ENEX file format, which is an XML-based file format, and it will include attachments, or else if it doesn't, I don't know how my ENEX got up to 12 gigabytes. But I would really like to see like a third party that would support, say, the ENEX format, so I could put that on another app just for security's sake.
Yeah. You know, I exported my Evernote to OneNote back when that option became available. It's from Microsoft, by the way. But just to try it, not so much to move, although partly it was because, like you, I'm a little worried about Evernote's future. But quite frankly, the migration did not go well. I've got like triplicates of some notes, which is, you know, not too bad. It's minor. But more importantly, any note that had any encryption on it. And I didn't have a lot of notes with encryption on it, but there are a few things where, you know, I had like a password that wasn't quite important enough to put in my e-wallet, but important enough to, you know about and important enough to protect. So I encrypted it in Evernote, and if any encrypted note does not come over, that's, you know, not too surprising, right? How is OneNote going to decrypt it?
Yeah.
So if you have encrypted files, you got to go hunt them down. I'm not sure how you hunt them all down in one fell swoop. Decrypt them and then manually copy them over. So that's one problem. Another problem is that OneNote's user interface still doesn't work the way I want it to. Now, I know it works the way a lot of other people want it to. There's lots of people very happy using OneNote. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, and I like using OneNote for some scenarios. In fact, I built an instructor manual that I needed to build for one of the programs that I coordinate at work. I built that in OneNote. I really like it in OneNote because it has the traditional notebook feel to it. But for my own workflow, I guess I could fit into OneNote. I just don't know if I want to.
Right. At this point, I'm the same way. It's if Evernote disappears and I'm able to, you know, get everything out of there in a way, migrate everything, which I've done, but, you know, it's not synchronized, right? So I'd have to do it one more time.
Yeah.
I guess I could find a way to
cut off Evernote completely, because I've got automated things that go into Evernote.
Yeah.
My default is to open Evernote and do things, so that would be the other problem of just once I get everything out, not going back in.
Right. I agree. And for me, the problem, the irony would be I went to Evernote because I couldn't stand OneNote years ago. I just said OneNote is interesting. It has some features that are nice, but its UI and UX were just not to my liking. It says, oh, Evernote, this is much better. Mm-hmm. And I've been there ever since. So we'll see. Evernote has not been making a lot of friends lately. Apparently, a lot of people are interested in leaving it, if you believe what the tech journalists are writing. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I am definitely interested to see what happens with it. I do think, like I said, over the next year, I'm just going to keep my eyes open.
Yeah, we gotta have an exit plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so hopefully, well, at least John and I hope, I think I can speak for John, that we hope Evernote is able to stabilize their ship.
Mm-hmm.
And keep moving on a reasonable course and stay profitable, because we've been, I don't know how long you've been using it, John, but I've been using it since, I don't know, 10 years, something like that, I think.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember when Evernote went from the PC-based version of it to the cloud-based.
Right.
Yeah, and I know I've been on it. I was on it a little bit before the PC, the cloud migration.
Right.
So yeah, that's probably about 10 years.
I was using it when it had what I call the toilet paper interface, where mm-hmm. it's just basically one giant roll of notes mm-hmm. that you literally just rolled up note by note.
And back then it was also pay software. It was like a $49 yeah. one-time charge.
Yeah. Okay, now moving over to another company that we have no idea how its future is going is Yahoo. And again, this is a week old news, but you may not have seen it. And Yahoo and DuckDuckGo apparently have some kind of partnership where DuckDuckGo is, and this is a weird, well, I guess it's not weird, but unusual. DuckDuckGo is using the Yahoo search engine, which I didn't know. Apparently they were always using it, but now they formalize it or something or other. And for those of you not familiar with DuckDuckGo, they're the privacy first search engine. So if you go to DuckDuckGo.com, you know, like the game, name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It will not track you in any way, doesn't keep cookies, doesn't, you know, basically it's very privacy oriented. And so, you know, if you don't want a trace of your searches, that's the place to go. Or you just want a little bit more privacy, you know, you just don't want Google to know every single thing you've ever done. And of course, nobody actually uses Yahoo anymore. So, well, at least I don't think
I've done so many things that Google is ashamed of me for. But you know,
we don't want Google to be ashamed of us.
Yeah,
that'd be sad. Okay. Anyway, and there is so DuckDuckGo has on Duck.co, Duck.co, had an article about, or not article, announcement about it, and Reddit had, I think there was like an AMA or something, or at least somebody from DuckDuckGo may have been answering stuff on Reddit. So I'll have a link to that. Speaking of Google and everything, knowing everything about you, they announced something called Google My Activity, one word, which you can get to myactivity.google.com, and it shows you everything Google knows about you in one place, all your searches, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if that sort of thing concerns you, you can go to myactivity.google.com and see what Google knows about you and adjust it.
And speaking of Google, since I have a Google thing that I just start playing with this week, the upgrade to Google two-factor authentication, which rolled out a few months ago. We didn't talk about it, but the idea, instead of using the authentication codes, is that if you have the Google app on your iPhone, the Google search app, it can actually deliver authentication prompts to you the same way that the Twitter app does for two-factor authentication on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing with that, and it is very nice when you're signing into Google. Instead of having to look up the code, just it gives you a little prompt on your iPhone. Says, are you trying to sign in? You tap on it, you hit yes, and you're in. So that's kind of a cool feature. If you haven't explored that yet, and you don't have to turn off the code-based authentication either. You can keep that on so that if you don't have your iPhone but you have something else that delivers your one-time codes, like 1Password has built-in capability for that, or Google Authenticator, whatever, you can keep both of them. So that's kind of a cool option if you haven't looked at it yet.
Okay, and here's a I don't know if this is exactly the same thing you're talking about, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. But a couple of weeks ago on Twits, This Week in Google,
mm-hmm.
the guest host, whose name just escapes me, but anyway, the guest host for that podcast decided to try two-factor authentication on his Google account. And the pro tip is this. Unfortunately, he tied it to his Google Voice number. And since Google Voice then requires two-factor authentication, he had effectively locked himself out. of everything in Google.
That's very unfortunate.
Yeah. Now, fortunately for him, they're a pretty popular podcast. You know, instead of tens of listeners that we have, they have probably tens of thousands. And somebody from Google was listening and was able to help him out. But that's not a situation to go in. So the pro tip is this. If you are thinking of doing Google two-factor authentication, do not, I repeat, do not use your Google Voice phone number as the reference phone number for it to contact you, because that's not going to work.
I'd like to point out that you should probably never use the service that you are talking about as your backup to get into that service. So right. The other example there is when you set up a new account for, say you have your own domain email address, like I do, and Todd has his own domains and things like that. For the administrative contact on that, don't use an email address at that domain.
Right.
It sounds very simple, and it sounds like, who would actually do that? People do it because they don't really think about it. It's like, right. Oh, that's my email address. I always use that.
Right.
But if you do that and you have some problem with that, you are out of luck.
Yeah. So, it's a good idea to have a Google Mail or Yahoo Mail or Microsoft Hotmail, whatever it's called these days, Outlook.com, I guess, backup account that you use for these kind of things away from your personal domain, or vice versa. You know, if you're doing something and using Google Mail for something, use your other, mail, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm.
So two pro tips in one.
We're pros. Yeah. We give tips.
There you go. And speaking of pros, so we didn't have the podcast last week, but had we done it last week, it would have been the 5-year anniversary of the disbandment. Is that a word? Of the original
I like that the word abandonment's in it.
So disbandition, whatever. Microsoft decided to get rid of its Windows Mobile MVP group on June 30th, 2011. And the reason I was going to bring it up last week and am bringing it up this week is because they changed over their MVP program again 5 years later.
Yep.
Last week, just before the 4th of July. So the MVP program is now solely developer types, I guess, and enterprise types. And the consumer groups, like our friends who are still MVPs in Windows Phone, have been moved over to the insider group. So I think the Windows consumer MVPs, I'm not sure what that is actually. They used to be like Windows Desktop, and I don't know if they have those different categories anymore. And Windows Phone group are moved into Windows Insider group, which is, I'm not sure what it's going to mean. And there's, I don't know. I don't know what. And the MVP program used to have a lot of benefits associated with it, including going to the summits, which were always fun. I always said it was the best part, getting to see my fellow enthusiasts who later became good friends, like John, mm-hmm. in person. And it also included the MSDN Universal Account for a while. That went away about 7 years ago, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, just about the time they kicked us out.
Yeah.
All the good stuff started leaving with us.
Yeah. But this is not unusual. Microsoft does reorg the MVP program. In fact, 1 year, boy, this was a long, I want to say about 12, 13, 14 years ago, they got rid of the whole program.
Yeah, that was the most epic of reorgs ever.
Yeah, so they just said one day, the MVP program has outlived its usefulness, and they're all gone. Every single one, 100%. And there was an outcry, and people were covering it in the news. I remember reading about it in ZDNet and all that sort of thing. And then they said, maybe that wasn't such a good idea.
Maybe we'll keep it, I thought, I always remember the great MVP purge of whatever year that was.
Yeah. That was a good one. But, the thing to remember, I think, is this. And I always tried to keep it in my head, too, when I was an MVP. I don't know about you, John. Maybe I always thought about it this way. The MVP recognition is just that. It's a recognition for something you would do anyway.
Exactly.
Right. And so I didn't feel like they owed me anything. I was grateful that they did give me stuff, or allowed me to do things like go to the summit and things like that. I was always great, but I never felt like they owed me anything, although some days I had to catch myself and think, wait. What am I really? I don't work for them, right? Mm-hmm. I don't get paid by them.
I will say the only thing that I thought was The only problem I ever really had was when we did, when, you know, the mass exodus occurred and they disbanded Windows Phone. I thought it was a little weird who was able to stay in and who wasn't. And there was, you know, there was some discussion of, okay, wait a minute. If two of us are doing the exact same thing, why did so-and-so stay in and so-and-so wasn't even given that consideration? And so I always thought that sort of it would have been nicer if they just made a clean break and said, okay, everyone, you know, we're sorry, but we're not having this group anymore. Or if they had said, you know what? Maybe some of you have done things in other MVP realms, and maybe, you know, we could move MVPs around. I thought it was a little weird that happened. But, you know, that felt like sour grapes for about 2 days, and then I thought, well, it was a fun run, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
I never really thought that, actually. You know, I kind of knew why the folks who remained as MVPs were. That's because they were contributing to the Microsoft Answers site, which most of us couldn't stand using, so we didn't use to provide any support there. I mean, that's why I didn't. I said, this is the worst user interface I've seen in my life. I can't believe this got through anything. You know, this got through any kind of review at all. But that's why I stopped providing support. It was just a terrible interface that I hated using. And hey, I'm not getting paid. You know, this is my own time. I do it because I enjoy it. And once I stop enjoying it, I'm going to stop doing it. And so I stopped enjoying it.
Yeah.
But so, at any rate, interesting, and we wish our friends who are moving over to the Windows MVP Insider or Windows Insider MVP program the best of luck. Hope you get some good information. And for a while we did when we were MVPs, I thought. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah, I really don't know what sort of perks are left.
Yeah. So we shall see. It's a whole new world for them, and we'll see what happens to the MVP program going forward. There's been some interesting discussion and other podcasts. I know I heard Mary Jo Foley discussing it on Windows Weekly with Leo Laporte and Paul Thurrott. So that was kind of an interesting little discussion on their, not that they have a lot of inside information about it, but their opinions about it were kind of interesting. So I would recommend people go listen to that if you want to hear a different perspective. And the last item, you bought a toy.
Yeah, I bought a toy, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it. I know this is a audio podcast, so you can't see the toy. But so about a year ago, StarTrek.com, which is kind of the official Star Trek store that you can go buy a number of fun things with, announced the Bluetooth communicator. And this is an original series prop communicator. It's based off the master props from the original series that has a built-in Bluetooth headset functionality with it and a ton of other fun things to play with. It will give you, if you don't use it connected to a phone, you can get a bunch of different noises and sounds and things like that out of it. It's got a crazy amount of, it's only two buttons, but there are special button press combinations. But honestly, the coolest thing about it is that when someone calls you, you whip out the communicator, you flip it open, it answers, and you talk to them through the speakerphone in the communicator. There is no way for it to just be a regular, you know, kind of handset where you'd hold it up to your ear. Right. No, it's a speakerphone. But the fact that you can flip it and start talking to someone, and then as soon as you close it, it hangs up the phone. And there's also a way to activate Siri voice command on an Android phone, Google Now. So you can hit a button and it'll say voice command, and then you'll hear the Siri beep. And so you can talk to computer through it and actually get some results back and do dialing and that sort of thing. So if you have $150, so it is not a cheap toy.
No, not a cheap toy at all.
And it comes with a charging stand. The charging is completely inductive through the back of the communicator, so there's no place to plug in a cable on it at all. So they didn't break. There isn't even a mini USB or micro USB port on it. It just charges through the back panel. Wow. And it has a nice little charging stand that comes with it. So you can sit that on your desk. And it's very similar if you own the Phaser, which is the universal remote Phaser that you can buy. So I have both of them now, and they both look very nice. And they're expensive, but they're really fun toys. So if you're an avid Trekker and you really enjoy that sort of thing, I would recommend. They're not, you know, the best values in the world. And yes, there are universal remotes with better features and Bluetooth headsets with better features. But if you're a Trekker and you want it, I like it. I would recommend it.
And by the way, I don't think there's anything wrong with being only a speakerphone, because if I remember my Star Trek correctly, and at least in the original series, actually any series, they never put up to their head. They always spoke to it in front of them, like a Nextel two-way phone.
Exactly, exactly. Right? So I don't think one of my friends was the one who said, well, it'd be nice if you could also use it as up to your head.
And but that would be wrong. You can just say, that'd be wrong. That'd be wrong. So, no, it wouldn't be nice. Yeah. It would mean people be holding you. It'd be like Steve Jobs once said, you're holding it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And we don't want to annoy Steve Jobs.
No.
Even though he's dead.
Right. No. Well, even more so. If you know what I mean. But anyway, one more thing I wanted to add to your note about talking to it and activating Siri and that sort of thing. So this is related to it. You know, I didn't put it in our show notes, but apparently Microsoft has been saying or telling the press how important their artificial intelligence work is and blah, blah, blah. And all I can say is this to Microsoft and your AI. If Cortana is an example of your AI, you've got a long way to go and you are in deep trouble. The other day, my daughter, who's home for the summer, and I were talking about something, and we couldn't figure out, you know, if somebody was dead or alive, or, you know, one of those kind of things. We just needed to fact check something. And I had my Windows 10 notebook in front of me, so I asked Cortana. And Cortana just, first, it couldn't understand me because apparently my English is so poor. And B, when it finally didn't understand me, it didn't get the question at all. It gave a completely wrong response. So my daughter looks at me kind of annoyed. She says, Dad, and the Echo is standing right next to, or sitting right next to my notebook. She says, Dad, just ask Alexa. And sure enough, we use the trigger word for Alexa. Sorry, Alexa. We use the trigger word for the Echo. And one question, correct answer, first time out. And, you know, Alexa the Echo is not known for being a really top-notch AI system, right? It's basically very vertical in the things it can do, but wow, it really did a much better job than Cortana. I mean, way better in terms of understanding my speech, which I guess apparently is impaired in some way, according to Cortana, and in just in getting me a rational and reasonable response to my question.
So what I'd really like to see on that note is all of the major AIs work together, because then they would actually be unstoppable. So I support Alexitana now. And if we could just have Alexitana now that would connect all four of them together, we might actually get a really good UI or AI out of that.
You know what I'd like to know is if there is this. Is there a question you can ask any two or all three of the AIs today, you know, the Google, Amazon, Microsoft solutions, that would trigger them all simultaneously and set it up so they start asking each other questions endlessly? You know what I mean? Is there a question like, I don't know what the question would be, but can you just say, you know, Cortana, Alexa, you know, okay, Google, Siri, blah, 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 and they just start talking, and then the other one starts thinking they're asking a question, they start answering each other with another question, and that would be fun.
And that will be the end of the earth. So if you listen to this podcast and there's Armageddon outside, thank Todd of God's War.
You're welcome. Alrighty, I'm sorry for my botched introduction, but like
you'll get it right next week.
Yeah, I'll be more in practice. We're out of phase, out of focus. We didn't have a podcast last week. We had a long weekend. Blah blah blah. Pokemon Go is apparently destroying parts of the universe, or at least melting down Niantic.
Well, server, there's probably Pikachus and stuff that are in our way that we don't even know about.
There you go. Okay, so hopefully we'll be back next weekend. If not, the weekend after that. I think John might have some travel up. I am done traveling for the moment. So we'll be back eventually, and we'll talk to you next time.